Well, folks, what's a crack? Welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast. It's Gareth McGlynn here, your host. Today's episode of the podcast is all about design build. It's one of the questions I get from the audience all the time. It's the popularity now of design build. To give you an idea, 25% of the projects that are going to be built over the next 10 years are going to be design build. And our guest goes into great detail on the figures and the advantages of design build. The guest is none other than Brett Polis. He is a National Director of Pre-Construction and Estimating at Burns & McDonnell. Now, to give you an idea, if you don't know anything about Burns & McDonnell, they have both architecture and engineering in-house. So their capabilities around design build are incredible. He also sits on the board of directors for the Design Build Institute of America, and that's the Southwest chapter. So great insight from Brett. We also talk about how we capture and utilize pre-construction data, again, following into the 360 data loop that they're trying to get at Burns & McDonald. Then we talk about technology and AI, how it's going to impact us right now, how they're utilizing it right now, and how it will shape the future of pre-construction and estimating. Then we talk a little bit about their self-performing capabilities and how that feeds into the design build side. Brilliant episode. Listen, I hope you enjoy it. As always, let's hear from our sponsors. That's Beck Technology and Concentric.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating efforts, visit us at beck-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
Brett Polis, what is the crack? Welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Gareth. I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Nice. And I was just admiring that view. That is Fort Worth, Dallas.
It is. Yeah, Fort Worth right outside the windows. I'd point the camera to downtown, but the sun's beating through the windows. But yeah, it's great views here at our office in Fort Worth.
Yeah, I just remember being in Beck Tech's office as well. You look out the windows and the whole land just runs for miles.
It does. It's great. Big open views. We've got a couple of bridges over here. An arena over here on this side, and the city's growing here in Fort Worth, so it's great.
Brilliant. Well, listen, Brett, rather than me talk about your background, give us a quick rundown on your position with Burns McDonnell and what you're doing right now.
Sure. So I'm the National Director of Pre-Construction and Estimating for Burns & Mac. We do about $5 billion in construction annually. We have seven major divisions, oil and gas, power, or energy, I should say. So combined cycle power plants. We do transmission distribution, water, wastewater. We do commercial food and consumer products, aerospace, aviation, and federal. So we do quite a bit of work in transportation as well. Quite a bit of work across all market sectors, but specifically we're an integrated design build company. So we have in-house engineering, in-house architecture, and of course, in-house construction. With self-performed capabilities as well.
Brilliant. And that is what I want to talk to you about, Brett. I hope you've got your design build hat on. But not only all those responsibilities within Burns & Mac, but you're also sit on the board of directors for the Design Build Institute of America for the Southwest chapter. And we talked about it, we've talked online, and my guests and the listeners, they're all trying to do design build. They're all looking at IPD, negotiated clients, owners, they're pushing that way. And to be honest with you, contractors are the same. They've got more control over risk, more control over costs, and they feel that they deliver a better product. But there's very few of them that are set up the way you guys, in-house engineering, in-house architecture. Talk to us about the fundamentals of design build. And what challenges, because I would imagine Burns & McDonnell, I know you work with Beck Group as well. They were traditionally a design build who had architecture in-house. How difficult is it? And probably to start, what is the difference between design build and just traditional?
Design bid build.
Yeah.
Sure. So to start it off, design build is essentially collaborative delivery. So the idea there is that everyone sits on the same side of the table as the owner. It's a partnership through the design process to where in typical design bid build, an owner contracts with a designer and contracts with a contractor. The designer gets to work, designs their documents, and then they issue for construction. And then the market bids on those documents. So in that type of environment, what they're lacking is the feedback from the contractor, potentially what value engineering items could have been incorporated in design if you have a hot market, or long lead procurement. One of the big values of design build is that you can release early packages or phase procurement packages to where you can get ahead of lead time. So in a market today where you have long lead electrical equipment, if you have a basis of design for that equipment and you're going to design around that gear, you could release that gear within, you know, months of design starting or within weeks really of design starting. And that's the value that I see Burns & Mac provides is we do a lot of design for procurement. So if there are long lead, substation transformers that are 2-year lead time, we'll start those today and we'll end up doing contract negotiations for the construction portion and a phase two portion of the contract to amend in construction scope and language after the fact. So that's a real big benefit of design build is you can have multi-phase projects and multi-phase contracts. And of course, the benefit of having in-house design, architecture, and construction is that it's all one family. It's one group that you're dealing with. It's one single contract. You could still do design build with multiple parties. You can have a separate design firm from a construction company and they partner together, which is more commonplace in design build. But I really do think there's a ton of value in having an integrated company that does all of it in-house. I could walk down the hallway and I'm talking to our designers. I can go around the corner, I'm talking to procurement, go around the other corner and I'm talking to our construction professionals and project controls and schedulers. And it's all right here. So instead of having to schedule a meeting that might be the end of the day or might be tomorrow with the design firm, I can literally walk down the hallway and talk to any of those partners here in-house.
Brilliant, Brett. So instead of firing F-bombs over the phone, you can go down the street. you can go down the corridor and clip a few people around the ear. I like it.
That's exactly right. And if they have questions, they can come by and say, hey, we're thinking about designing it this way from a constructability standpoint. What are your thoughts? And instead of drafting a big RFI or having a large meeting with the owner, we could sit here and have that conversation here and then take it to the owner once we've collaborated and talked about how it should be built. And there's just extreme value in that.
Brilliant. And Brett, and I know you came from the Beck Group. Obviously, they had architectural in-house. We actually had Offgang on, it's an architecture firm in New York, on the podcast recently. We had their director of engineering, and they found value on bringing a director of engineering into the company to be able to sort out engineering at an early stage. How valuable is that third wheel? So you've got the architecture, the construction, and now the engineering. How did that change from the Beck Group now to Burns & Mac?
So the Beck Group had acquired an architecture firm. The difference between, I guess, Beck and Burns McDonald is that we started as an engineering company in the late 1800s and had in-house engineering, had in-house architecture, but really started in more of the public infrastructure sector. So we were heavy engineering. So I say big E, little A, lots of engineers. We do have a lot of architects, but our company has much more engineers than we do have architects. And we really target more of the complex type projects that do have heavy process. Or have a lot of engineering complexity. So I guess the benefit of a design build firm that has heavy architectures, you may chase, vertical high rise class A type projects. And the benefit of a design build company that's heavy engineering, you could chase some of those food and consumer products or pharmaceuticals, chemical plants, oil and gas refineries, things like that. That we excel more in just because we started as an engineering firm and have upwards of 10,000 engineers on staff.
Brilliant, brilliant. And you mentioned those markets that you're in. I mean, the market's booming, specifically in those areas. How are you finding the kind of the backlog for 2023, 2024 and further afield?
It's good. Our backlogs are really strong. Again, we're very diversified, so that helps. All of our eggs are not in just a commercial basket or just an oil and gas basket. So if one market dips, generally another market picks up. In the case of public infrastructure right now, that's really picking up. And it's serving the company really well right now that we're diversified.
Fantastic. And then go back to the board of directors on the design build for the Southwest. Are you seeing more companies contact you guys coming on board wanting to do design build? And where is that coming from? Is that driven from the market? Is it driven from owners?
So a lot of it is owner education, and they're seeing the volatility that happened through the pandemic. And a lot of projects are coming in over budget. You know, they had priced a job at a conceptual phase. By the time they go the project or get funding for the project, now with the cost of money too, things are more expensive. And so a lot of owners are seeing the value that if we have a collaborative process and do target value design through the design phase, as opposed to doing value engineering kind of post-mortem, the documents are baked and now, hey, we're 15% over budget. How do we get this project back down? And then you're having to pay your designer to go back and design and figure out ways to cut costs. And of course, the contractor's time to do that, whether it's a pre-construction services agreement or however that's handled, you're paying more money to do that post-mortem. So if you could do that during the design process and have a constructor that could sit there and provide feedback of, I would use gear instead of, you know, this or that, or simplify this skin or this curtain wall or whatever it is to use this because of based on availability, things like that, that you can provide to the owner is invaluable because once it, you know, push comes to shove and it comes time to start procuring that equipment, if that project pushes out 18 months because you didn't provide feedback on something that could have been a 12-month lead time, you know, that comes back on the contractor. And the owners are looking for that expertise and that feedback, and design build really provides the situation to do that.
Yeah.
So one of the things I thought was interesting too is I'd read through I'm the membership chairman. I sit on the board for DBIA, as you mentioned. One of the things I'd heard that $8.5 trillion of total U.S. construction spend between 2022 and 2026, that's what the projection is $8.5 trillion. And of that, over $2 trillion is design build.
Wow.
Which is, it used to be called alternative delivery because it was a fraction of construction spend. And now it's a large portion of construction spend. Granted, those are projections, but the Design Build Institute of America has a publication on that. And I can send that to you whenever you publish the podcast, if you'd like.
Yeah, please do, Brett. And what we'll do, folks, is we'll put it in the show notes below, a link to it or on a PDF. But that's incredible, 2.5. And then, I mean, that's almost a 25%. Where do you see it going? Because design build, and if you look at the last 5 years alone, the appetite for it is through the roof.
I think inevitably long-term design build is going to be the basis, the baseline form delivery. It makes the most sense. It could save the owner the most money from risk allocation, risk mitigation standpoint from both the owner side and the contractor side. It makes the most sense. It's just a better environment to do work in. And I think owners realize that, and design build entities, both designers and constructors realize that. So the future, I think, is design build.
Brilliant. And one thing I want to touch on, you just mentioned as well, is pre-construction services package or a contract. It's one thing that on the podcast is I get probably the most questions about. They call it free con, and it's at the forefront of everybody's mind. Some of these young, now obviously we're a different bald game to Burns and McDonald, but some of these young innovative companies are literally basing their companies on pre-construction services. They're going out, they're being firm with the owner, the developer, and they're saying, listen, this is the value that you can get, the return on investment. I from my speaking with VPs and directors, I reckon there's people are probably covering between 15 and 40% of their costs through pre-construction services. I would like to see that higher. What's your view on it?
Sure. So I completely agree. Every contractor has free con services. And even if there is a pre-construction agreement, for the most part, we're not covering 100% of our costs in doing that. And that's okay. I think when the owners realize, especially if it's a new owner, it's a new design build relationship between the two entities, we, in a lot of cases, will not charge a pre-construction services agreement to to start that relationship, to show them that the value, or really to show them the value of that process and what they get in the end. And then the next go around, they know what the value is, and we're able to recoup some of those costs through a pre-construction services agreement. I will say, I think there's a lot of value if you have an owner who doesn't quite know what they want, who might have several options or several locations on the table for where they want to build. And you might be doing some site evaluations or site selection services and costing in different regions. I would absolutely talk to your owner about having a pre-construction services agreement and explain the cost of your time, the cost of your effort to do multiple iterations. It's not like it's just one project in a typical design bid build scenario where everybody is pricing at one time. You may be pricing a project four or five times through different site adaptations or a 30, 60, 90 set. And so that time investment, I think the owners realize the value they get out of that. And it could certainly, you could certainly recoup some of your costs through a pre-con agreement.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's up to all the contractors. I mean, there's VPs and directors that listen to this all the time. And I would encourage everyone to start pushing back on the owners and explain that. And it's about explaining, and it's about communication about what they get. And the more contractors that push back, and as you say, we're not looking for 100% of pre-construction services, but there's got to be a decent amount. And it's just about getting, not getting paid for the whole thing, but just getting enough to ease your mind. Because there's a lot people that they're even tying it into saying, listen, I'll do it for free now, but at the end or halfway through, if I can save you so much, then we've got to recoup some of that cost. And there's a little bit of risk on that as well. So I'm glad
put some sweat equity into it and have an incentive. Absolutely. Yeah. Have an incentive deal. It shows the owner that if we don't bring the value, then we don't get the incentive. So yeah, I think that's a great approach.
Brilliant. Love it. And then, I mean, we wanted to discuss design build. It's becoming more popular. You mentioned the numbers there. Where does it, you're across seven different divisions. You have seven chief estimators. Does design build, is it across all of them? And where does it work best?
It is. And in some cases, we'll call it something different. So in our energy sector, if we're doing a solar farm, or if we're building a combined cycle or single cycle power plant, we'll call it EPC. So engineer, procure, construct. But it's the same exact sort of delivery method. Our teams are collaborating. We're involved through the pre-construction process to provide constructability reviews and target value design. In our vertical commercial space, whether it's manufacturing or whether we're doing a project for an aerospace client, in most cases, they're going to call that design build. In the water space and public infrastructure space, they're going to call it design build as well. So it really kind of depends on the client or the market and what coin or what term they've coined. But yes, across all sectors, essentially, we're pursuing design build projects. And that's oil, gas, as I mentioned, transportation, water, power, energy, transmission, distribution, foods and consumer products, and then aviation and federal. So basically every space you could work in, we're doing design build in.
Brilliant. Love it. Lovely control. And that's exactly what you want. And that's how you're set up. Now, this leads me on to the next question. We mentioned both of us were at Advance in Pre-Construction this year, which was an absolute hit. I have to say, it's my first time. I know you said it was your first time. I would highly recommend anybody listening to go to Advance in Pre-Construction. I was a little bit skeptical. Hanson Wade, I worked with him a little bit on promoting it, but I have to say I was blown away. It was brilliant for not only the tech companies, but everyone just to collaborate. The way it was set up, the way that the different speakers on different topics, it was brilliant.
It was, you know, I went out there to talk to several tech companies within the construction space, and I found a lot of value in that. But I also found a lot of value in talking to contractors about those technologies and about the technology platforms they're using, and what's happening within the industry for AI and technological advances. So not only going to the vendors direct, but talking to seeing what our peers are doing, you know, what's working for them, what's not working for them. And there was a lot of value in that, and a lot of conversations that were open and honest between the contractors that I thought was really valuable.
And listen, and this comes back to design build that you said. It's all about communication and collaboration. I think there's a stigma within general contractors that everyone's got to keep their own information, keep their own wins, their own losses, and keep their own headaches in-house. BIM VDC, now that area, and I've said this before on the podcast, they are unbelievable at collaborating. They put free stuff out on YouTube. They are the most helpful, open-minded, collaborative kind of group of people that I've ever seen. I think contractors, pre-construction department, estimating departments within general contractors need to take a leaf out of their book. And I got that as well at Advance in Pre-Construction. And that's what I was most happy about.
It's the future, the BIM VDC portion and model-based estimating is the future of estimating.
Yeah.
So with AI integrations, with open AI between platforms to take a Revit model or Rhino model or whatever you're modeling in Plant 3D, and incorporating that into your estimate or estimating directly out of a 3D platform is inevitably the future of construction. And our company has been positioning ourselves to standardize our code of accounts for how we code materials. And we're going to incorporate that same thing to where our models that we're designing to are going to have the same cost code or code of accounts that our estimating models have that go out in our project teams. Use their time cards or code their time to where it's one integrated system. And the idea is the future of estimating is that three dimensions in AI environment. So we're positioning ourselves today for what we think the construction industry is going to be 7 years from now or 10 years from now. And a lot of folks at that Advancing Pre-Construction Conference are doing the same.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what I love. Everybody's thinking along the same lines. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a few outliers that are way ahead of everyone else.
Sure.
But as they say, as the Chinese say, when's the best time to plant a tree 7 years ago? When's the next best time today? That has to happen. And the contractors that I was speaking to, the people I had on the podcast from Advancing Pre-Construction, they're all at different stages. But it's really important that the people, no matter what stage they're at, they've got to be open and honest. And you mentioned the whole flow thing on the data. The data flow is important to you. I mean, with everything being integrated and in-house with you, how difficult is it going to be to get that data flow running through the whole project?
So that's the backbone of this initiative is the standardization of our code of accounts. And the whole reason for it is what we're calling cost 360. And it's taking the estimated costs versus the as-built cost and filtering the data out for what was scope creep, what was potentially misscope, what was change orders, and then filtering that back through to our code of accounts, back into our estimating platform. So we can do a realization of data on how close were we, or how over or how under are we? Can we be more competitive, or did we potentially lose money on that one line item? And the more data we have, the more sophisticated we can be as a design build contractor. And a lot of that is whether it's design efficiencies or whether it's actual production in the field, that data is extremely valuable. But I think it's probably going to take us about 18 months to get exactly where we need to be. Probably 14 months from today when we started it was about 18 months. But that's where we're heading. And I think everybody else is likely heading in the same direction as AI and all of this technology we have at our fingertips becomes more available.
Brett, I'm going to act like an owner now. I love nothing better than a line in the sand. 14 months from now, you're going to be on the Pre-Construction Podcast telling us how it's all working so beautifully.
That's right. I actually listened to Kevin Waddell's, our chief water estimator, his podcast with you. And one of the things he talked about too was at 5%, within 5%. Yeah. And I can tell you that project is there. And one of the things you guys talked about was having him back on to talk about whether it's in that window. And it is. Brilliant. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, that's what it's all about. Like, you know what I mean? You got to have something to strive for. And I can imagine in 14 months, nothing's easy, but how much more less risk, how much more enjoyable estimating and pre-construction will be when we get these technologies, these AIs. And that's another thing I wanted to talk to you about. There seems to be a lot of single point solutions out there. How do we get them all talking to one another through APIs and the data flowing properly? Is that the biggest challenge?
It is. I think, having the open API to where these platforms can communicate with each other. And inevitably, I'm hoping some of these companies can consolidate and merge and become a unified platform. But it is, yeah, the API is the benefit right now. And if they don't have an open API to where they can communicate back and forth, it's kind of a strike against them, because that's what we need. Everybody in the industry needs that.
Yeah, absolutely. Funny, I talked to quite a lot of the vendors down there, and I agree with you, right? There's got to be a lot of mergers, acquisitions, and it's going to happen, and it's going to be happening for the benefit. But what we don't need is two players or three players. We need disruption. Right. We need people competing with each other. We need good competition. And to be honest with you, and we went through quite a lot of the people, a lot of them are open to that because they know that that's what they need to drive each other on.
And that's what stems innovation. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. 100%. Absolutely. So talk to me now. I mean, within our own company here, within the podcast, we use AI. Right now, within Burns and McDonald, what are you looking at AI-wise? Where do you see it being utilized immediately within the next 4 or 5 months?
So within the company, we're using it for a handful of things right now. The future state, it's going to be even more. But we're even using it for like safety notifications, on advanced notifications on when your safety training expires. And we're using AI to mine our database of training modules and give us a feedback report. And it notifies each individual, or will notify each individual employee 30 days out or 45 days out of when their safety training expires, to make sure that we don't get to that point where it is expired and they have to go in and renew their training. So it's preemptive. And that's helping us in that space. The future of estimating, I think, is going to involve a lot of AI. The estimator is not going anywhere. The pre-construction professional is not going anywhere. But I think the day-to-day, some of the mundane task of quantity takeoff and things like that, our estimators and pre-construction professionals are going to have to become, they are going to become more sophisticated and focus on other items and sharpen those tools, as opposed to the QTO quantity takeoff type stuff that we'll be able to generate out of models through AI. So I think that's inevitably the future. Again, our estimators and pre-construction professionals aren't going anywhere, but I think that the AI is going to strengthen our abilities and skill sets to where they can focus on more pressing issues.
Absolutely. And that's the exciting part of it. I mean, I get people text me all the time, real junior people, oh my God, should I change industry? I said, where are you going to change to? You're not going to go to financial services. You're not going to become a lawyer. They're going to go first. Your job is safe. Construction is safe. The meme going around LinkedIn is brilliant at the minute. I mean, AI ain't going to build many buildings, you know? And that's the beauty of being a pre-construction professional and an estimator right now. It's going to lift those mundane stuff for the real mission critical critical thinking, the soft skills that the real good, and communication that the real good estimators and pre-construction managers are good at. And I love that. Now, I want to touch on one thing that we talked about earlier, and it's really important, especially with Burns McDonald on the design build side, and that's the self-performing aspect of it. Tell me a little bit about that. Is that an area you guys are trying to expand into? How's that going? How's that kind of progressing?
It is. So Burns & Mac has about, I believe the number's now around 13,000 employee owners. One of the great things about Burns & Mac is we are employee owned as well, 100% employee owned. And we have about 2,000 craft. So craft skilled labor right now sits around 2,000. We have an office in Pearland, Texas, in South Texas, that a lot of our teams on our constructor side or self-perform side sit. And then we have an office in Appleton, Wisconsin, through an acquisition we made several years ago, a company called ASCO. And we have a prefab shop, a metal shop, and they do self-perform as well. So a lot of the solar fields we do that are massive solar fields, we're actually fabricating the helical piles that are going on those projects. It's something that's repetitive and it's done over and over and over again. So it's something we realized there's value in us actually fabricating that ourselves, because it's the same sort of item. And so we're self-performing the installation and the fabrication of those helical piles. But we're doing self-perform on substations, oil and gas refineries. We're kind of targeting the heavy industrial markets first, and then we're going to branch out into more of the vertical markets next.
Brilliant. Exciting times. And that's the beauty of being, it sounds like obviously you guys are a huge, huge company, but you seem quite agile as well when it comes to innovation and self-performing. I mean, that's not always the case when you look at these big guys or big players. They're kind of rigid and they keep doing what's working. And that's, unless you're moving forward, you're moving backwards.
That's right. Yeah, we want the agility. Not only on our self-perform side, but our procurement side, we directly procure billions of dollars in equipment every year because we want to be able to control our own destiny. So we want to control the procurement cycle, and we also want to control the construction cycle, the actual performance of construction cycle, because as the labor market starts to shrink, and it has been shrinking year after year, we realize there's value in having on-site staff, on-site labor within the trades. They could be able to execute a lot of this work for us. So the more we realized that we could control our own destiny, the better off we were. So it started in procurement, and now it's growing into self-perform. So yeah, it's the way that we like doing business for sure.
Yeah, no, I could talk to you all day about this, but Brett, I think it's a brilliant advantage to you guys as well when it comes to a recruitment tool, because you can bring people into trades. And then you can see, you can monitor, manage, develop people right up through the business, whether it's right into pre-construction, estimating, operations, it doesn't matter. BIM, VDC, if you see some good young lady that's doing, as you say, the substation, and she wants to get into, to go back to school to then get into VDC and BIM, then you can facilitate that move.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we actually have folks in our estimating department who came off their tools and are now working in the office. And it's a great pathway. One, it strengthens our internal estimating team because there's a person there who's actually built it in the field and has spent years in the trades. And two, it provides them an opportunity when they're ready to settle down and have a family or come off the road, take a break from traveling, and they can sit there and bring value to us and the pre-construction department. So I absolutely agree. It's a great opportunity for them and a great opportunity for us.
Brett, you're the same as Kevin. I could sit here all day. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. So listen, I want to thank you very much. Obviously, there's going to be people listening to this. They're going to be saying, listen, Brett was unbelievable. But there's a couple of things I want to kind of push back on, but find a little bit of information. What's the best way to kind of get in touch? Is it through LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, absolutely. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, and I'd love to have a conversation.
Brilliant. Absolutely. As always, folks, the other document that Brett mentioned, I'll put in the show notes along with his LinkedIn profile, and they can shoot you a connection. Thank you again very much, Brett.
Great. Thanks, Gareth.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I've experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Brett Polis, National Director of Pre-Construction and Estimating with Burns & McDonnell. It is question time. Question number one, favorite project?
I would say I had a really fun project in downtown Dallas. We built the AT&T Discovery District. So their AT&T's headquarters is in downtown Dallas. And this is in past life. But I think that was probably one of my favorite projects. It was over a concourse. The plaza was, so it was all lightweight concrete. We put a stainless steel globe that was, I think, 27 feet tall out there. There was a 7-story media wall screen that wrapped around the building. it was a really cool, you know, kind of a banner project, I think, for me and my career.
Hey, speaking of a media wall, what about the Vegas Sphere? Have you seen it?
The Vegas Sphere is awesome. It is very cool. Oh, my God. And actually, the company that Seiko is a lighting company that did the lighting for that sphere, they did the lighting for that globe in AT&T Discovery District.
There you are. Eh? Small world. I saw it online the other day. I think it's unbelievable. Now, I wouldn't like to be paying for it, but it looks amazing.
Oh, no. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Next question. Biggest lesson learned in construction?
Biggest lesson learned, I would say... early in my career, I didn't ask questions as openly as I should have. One of the things I think I feared as a new constructor or new builder in the industry is I felt like I needed to know everything. And if somebody asked me a question and I didn't know right off the top of my head, I would go back and do some research and try to find the answer. But I think I could have had a lot more time saved and been more efficient had I just asked some of my peers and seniors those questions and not been shy about asking them. So I would say the biggest lesson learned that I had in my career is just asking questions and not being fearful or afraid to say, you know, I don't know, you know, and ask the question.
Love it. Absolutely. And that's where a good mentor, a good mentorship program comes in, where you can just pick up the phone and go, boom. Whereas some mentors, I'm sure, are just answering calls all day. So how do you de-stress, Brett? How do you get away from it all? I mean, you're overset. You've got all the divisions. You've 7 chief estimators to manage. How do you de-stress?
So I've got a 6-year-old daughter. Spent a lot of time with my daughter to unplug. I was sitting on the floor of our living room last night with building blocks and her. And that's a great way to unplug, you know, wash away the thoughts of the day and spend time with my kiddo. But I love doing clay shooting as well, sporting clay shooting and unplugging, getting out there with some buddies or my wife and just spending some time thinking about something other than work.
Love it. Next one, favorite food.
Favorite food. So my part of my family is Greek. I love Greek food. Mediterranean Greek food is my favorite.
Class. Favorite sports team.
Sports team, I would say probably the Texas Rangers baseball team.
Love it. Mentor, biggest, now again, the biggest influence, but people have a lot, but is there a special mention to someone in your career, like a mentor or a person that maybe got you into construction? Who would that be?
So I had an internship out of college and I worked for a superintendent. So I was a field engineer doing site grading layout on a long linear light rail project. It was like a 26-mile light rail project. And I had a superintendent named Lonnie. And Lonnie was a fantastic mentor. He was one of those guys that told me, you know, ask me anything. There's no stupid questions. And he was just down to earth. He told me the ins and outs of the industry. And he was honest and said, there's going to be a lot of long nights. You're going to work weekends, the first part of your career. And he was straightforward with me. And I was super appreciative of the value and insights that he provided. He passed away several years ago, but he's one of those guys that, you know, if I could have another conversation or reach back out later in my career when he was still alive, I wish I would have. Lonnie was just a great guy.
Yeah, we need more Lonnies in this world.
Yeah.
Favorite eatery and pub? We know that Fort Worth, it looks amazing behind you. If there was a special occasion, say you got a big bid through and a bid day and you got the news, where do you take the team to celebrate?
So I would say my favorite eatery would be this place called Lonesome Dove. And one of the master chefs owns it. His name's Tim Love over here in Fort Worth. I wouldn't take the entire team there because that would be a very expensive night out. but there's a great spot over here called the Rodeo Goat as well. That's burgers and beer. That's probably the place I'd take the team to celebrate a big project win.
Brett, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks.
Well, folks, I hope you got value from that. There's no doubt about it. Design build is going to be the method that's going to be used most over the next 10 to 15 years. And I think it's been driven, as Brett says, it's going to be driven by the owners and developers. And again, I think it helps overall the contractor side to mitigate risk and also keep a hold of costs. As always, folks, Brett mentioned two things there in the podcast. First, the PDF that is in the show notes. And also, if you're interested in catching up or following up with Brett, he's more than happy to answer any questions. His LinkedIn profile link will be in the show notes. Thanks again for listening. Please subscribe and share with your peers.